Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Kyle, come on, honey, it's time to go, his mom called up the stairs. A few minutes later, 11-year-old Kyle clomped down the stairs and sat in a lump at the bottom. Brought you guys some snacks in case you get hungry, his mom smiled, handing him a small cooler. Thanks. Kyle stayed glued to his step. Where's your jacket? It's too chilly to go without it today. His mom looked at him sideways. What's going on? Is there something you're not telling me? Kyle looked down at his sneakers and sighed. Do I really have to go with Dave? Kyle's mom sat down beside him and patted him on the knee. He's only trying to do something nice for you, for both of you. He'd like to build a relationship. Can't you give him a chance? But, Mom, Kyle looked up wearily, he's not my dad. I already have a dad. From a parent's perspective, what should we know about stepfathering? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has been working with issues of divorce and step-parenting for a number of years. Dr. Barry Freeman, a licensed clinical social worker, is a professor emeritus of early childhood education at Towson University in Towson, Maryland. He has a private therapy practice with children, adolescents, families, and groups. On his last visit with Parents Perspective, we discussed his book, Divorcing Father's Manual, 8 Steps to Help You and Your Child Survive and Thrive, and some of the issues it addresses. Dr. Freeman is the father of 2 grown daughters. Welcome back to Parents Perspective, Dr. Freeman.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
What would you say is the biggest myth about stepfathers?
When I mentioned this in the university when I was teaching parenting classes and asked my students what they thought about stepfathers, immediately the Brady Bunch came to mind. Some of them could even sing the song. And usually, with a little encouragement, I would have at least half the students singing the correct words. And that was the myth. And of course, that's not really what it is. The myth is that it's easy, but it's not. It's very hard work and a lot of conscious effort on the part of all the participants to make it happen.
Is there a significant difference between how children view stepfathers versus stepmothers? You know, we have the fantasy fairy tale stuff about the evil stepmother. Do stepmothers get more of a bad rap?
There is that evil myth of step-parenting that is really unfortunate. And it would be nice if there was another word for step-parent because it has such an awful connotation. I think what happens with mothers is they often are the ones who spend time alone as a single parent with their children. And they get this exclusive bond between mother and child. And it's the stepfather who comes into this situation who kind of interrupts it. And it makes it difficult because now the mother has to divide her attention between the new husband, the new love interest, and the children. And it can create a great deal of resentment. But in reality, I think stepmothers face the same challenges that stepfathers do. For example, the first challenge that often comes up is the fact that you have to create another family while maintaining a positive relationship with the biological children. And this can be really complicated because it complicates the relationship between, if the stepparents are married, the two newly married people because they have somebody else. I was dealing with one couple, and one of the concerns was that he's still tied to his ex-wife. Well, how is he tied to his ex-wife? Well, she would call and say, there's a computer problem, and the kids can't get online. They can't do their homework. So, of course, he would run right over there to try and fix it. And when talking to him about it, he said, I don't do it for the ex-wife. If I don't do it, my kids don't get online to do their homework, and they suffer. I'm not going to let them suffer. Yeah, she's using me. She could find somebody else to do it. But my kids, that's all I care about. So the couple really had to work that out because it was creating a barrier in the new relationship. So these conflicts can really occur.
Would you say there are traps that first-time stepfathers fall into?
Oh, sure, they're traps. And it's a good way of phrasing it. One of the researchers talked about the stepfather as having a limited license to parent. It's like the driver's licenses. You know, we're in some states where you can't drive after if you're underage. You can't drive after a certain hour. You have to have so many people in the car. The stepfather is really an intruder into an existing family. I mean, that's how the kids see it. And as an intruder, he steps in as the parent who's supposed to be the parent, but he really isn't the parent. So it's very difficult. You want to be a parent. You step into that role. He might have had that experience with his own biological kids as the parent, but he's not really the parent. And it takes time to adapt. And one of the things that many of us in the field do when working with stepfathers and stepfamilies, too, is to help them realize that they don't jump in full blast as full parent. It's going to take time and a great deal of patience. That statement you read, he's not my dad, I bet every stepfather has heard that, probably profanity laced when kids are older and with a lot of bitterness and anger. But that same, you can't tell me what to do, you're not my father.
And it's not even tell me what to do so much as I don't have a relationship with you like a real father. I saw that in a family where the children were pretty much grown-ups when the mother remarried. And she married someone the family had known for many years.
Yeah, yes.
The boys, her children, did not want to accept him as a father to them. Of course, their father was still alive and well and living in the same city. But they had not a great relationship with him either. One of them, to this day, who's in his 30s, does not want a relationship with the stepfather.
Again, we were talking about the term stepfather. I wish there were another word, so you wouldn't be a father. Probably all of us could use extra people to love us and care for us. And the goal when working with stepfathers is to get them to the point where they cannot be the child's father and don't even pretend to be the child's father and tell the child, hey, I'm not your father. You have a father. You're lucky. I'm just going to be another person in your life.
Who loves you.
Who cares about you. I'll give you what I can give you. We can have a relationship, and just because you like me doesn't mean you're disloyal to your father, which is what a lot of younger kids really have to struggle with. And that's hard to achieve. And one way of doing it is to avoid having the stepfather being called dad. He's not dad. And a lot of times mothers want to kind of force this on the situation because they don't like their former husband. They didn't think he was a good father. So now
we're starting
Phil
over.
Will be dad. Mm-hmm. And I've always talked to stepfathers and thought it would be nice if you could have a special word, a special nickname, pet name, whatever it is, so the child could call you something different and only you. So it would be very special. Not everybody would call you that. You're not Mr. Phil. I mean, that's a little too formal, and you're not Phil. But you have some special word that the child knows that you're a special person to him, and it can be the start of a personal relationship.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on stepfathering.
Popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Barry Freeman about being a stepfather. Are there other kinds of preparations that you'd recommend for somebody about to become a stepdad?
To really understand what children are experiencing with the step-parent coming in. And it's very conflicting for kids because they want to love this person. They want to like them. Maybe they don't want to love them right away. They want to like them. But if they like them and then they go home and their biological dad said, what did you do this weekend? Well, my friend and I, we did this and this and this. And they're afraid to do that because, you know, dad might look depressed about it because he's not seeing him as much or jealous or envious, all these things. So they're reluctant to say that. So to help the stepfather realize that you have to go very slowly in this situation and that the child is going to have these conflicts and that you have to deal with it and you have to help them deal with it. And one of the best ways to deal with it is to go to the biological father and say, hey, yeah, I'm new in the kid's life. You're the father. I recognize that. I respect that. I will never, ever say anything to disrespect you or to unvalue you. I just want you to know that. And I want you to know that I share your interest in your child's welfare. And I'll never do anything that's not in his best interest. Shake hands on it. We don't have to be friends, but we have a common goal. to just put that up front.
Is that something that's usually doable?
Unfortunately, it's one of the biggest obstacles. I was dealing with a case recently where when I get on the phone, the biological father, when I get on the phone to talk to my child, the stepfather answers the phone and he'll yell, "Your expletive deleted, no good bum father's on the phone, wants to talk to you." And he'll make all kinds of derogatory marks all the time about the father. It was very difficult for the child in that situation. So it's a matter of both people putting the best interest of the child in preparing them for that, preparing them that it's going to take a while. It's a long-term kind of thing, to be relaxed about it. It's not going to happen right away. You have to build up a rapport with the child. You have to build up trust. I mean, the little things that you can do, for example, discipline is always a big issue. And the way that I've really tried to deal with stepfathers with this and to talk to their new wives and say, look, you meet in a closed room. You're the executives of the family. And you come up with a policy of what's expected of the children, whether they're going to clear their dishes from the table, whatever it is. And you come up with the policy. And then once you come up with the policy, the biological parent is the one who enforces it. The stepfather doesn't come in and say, pick up your clothes. He might give a signal to the mother if that's an important thing. I'm not saying it's so important. If that's an important thing, and the mother will say, you must do this. So the stepfather doesn't come in as the heavy.
Now, what happens when the stepfather's by himself with the kids and the kids are doing what kids do best, which is test the limits?
Then you might have to deal with it, yeah. But hopefully, again, you would help the parents, stepfather and his new wife, draw the line at what's really important to draw a limit with.
Stepdads have to navigate the tricky terrain sometimes of parenting a stepchild and his own biological child as well.
And that creates one of the problems for a stepfather, because the myth in the Brady Bunch is that you come into the family and you love all the children equally. It doesn't work that way. You still come into this relationship and you still love your biological children. You have this strong bond with them. And these other kids are new. And the liberating thing, I think, is to tell the stepfather, you don't have to love the new children right away. But you have to treat all the children the same. You're going to treat all the children equally. And with younger kids in particular, they're so observant. How come he got 3 jelly beans and I got 2.5? Or how come he got the green one and I didn't get the green one? That you have to be very, very careful to treat all the children, your biological children, stepchildren, the same. But you're not going to love them the same. If you come into a relationship with a 10-year-old child that you've loved and nurtured for 10 years and then just meet a new child, you're not going to love them right away. After 2-3 years, you might really love them. And I don't know as a parent whether you love all your children the same or you love all your children uniquely. I think stepfathers, fathers, people in general have the capacity to love a lot of people in a lot of different ways. So to just say it's okay, this is not instant love. It's not like super glue where you get them together and wham, they're together. It's like a long setting glue that you have to put in the vise and leave for a couple days. It's going to take a while, and to be patient with it.
Any suggestions for first meetings of a new love interest's children?
Depending upon the age of the child, you explain to the child that, gee, you have friends and I have friends too and I'm going out with friends. And when kids ask you, are you going to marry them? Are you going to marry them? I think the father has to have an upfront relationship with the child and say, look, if someone I'm really interested in becomes more of a friend and I might marry them, I will tell you first. You'll be the first to know, and keep it as a casual friendship until someone becomes important, and then gradually introduce them to a child. And many stepfathers, if they're so involved with their own children and love them so much, they're not going to want to be involved with someone who doesn't care about their children. They just won't be attracted to someone who is not a child person, not caring about their own children and respecting their children and honoring them.
I have a friend who married a man who was widowed. She had a child. He had 5 children, young, under 11. And then together they had another child eventually.
Yeah.
But they had to bring this family together, and they had to accept her because she was going to be the mother who was taking care of them.
Right.
And yeah. their mother had died and had been very, very sick, and they had all gone through this together. It was a very difficult time for this stepmother, but also for the stepfather who suddenly had this other son who was older even than his children.
Sure.
It's complicated.
Sure.
And she has described, you know, what it was like to just be a friend to those children.
And she was replacing a ghost, which is even much more difficult because when someone dies, we tend to mm-hmm. not remember the bad things, but just all the wonderful things they
did. She never made rules, or
right.
so they said.
Right, yeah. Kids in families with a biological mother and father, I've been told, tend to play one parent against the other.
You've been told?
Yes. Perhaps everybody does that. Not that we've ever done that, I guess, when we were kids. But the same thing's going to happen.
What do we know about how children adjust to stepfathers? We've been talking about how stepfathers adjust to children. What about the other part of the equation?
Of course, it depends on the child's age. And the biggest problem that I found that children are dealing with is the loyalty issue, a feeling that they're disloyal. But again, the biological father and the stepfather can diffuse this by together telling the child that it's not disloyal to, like, mom's new husband, that we're civil to each other, they can see them be pleasant with each other, and have what I would just call a business-like relationship, the kind of relationship we have when we go into a store, order something, and we say thank you, they say thank you, they smile, have a good day, goodbye. We're not friends, but we're friendly, we're pleasant, we're civil. So if the parents do that, that helps with the major obstacle that I think kids have. Also, you have to remember that kids come into the relationship with a history. You don't know what it was like with the biological parent. You don't know what they witnessed if a divorce was uncomfortable. And so there might come in with some scars that have to be dealt with. And that's why a lot of mental health groups really advocate groups for kids who are going through separation and divorce, where they realize that, hey, we're just normal kids and gone through a tough time, and a lot of other kids have, and that it'll be okay. The feelings that a kid has about mother having a new husband and having to share mom are the same feelings that other kids have. And they talk about how to deal with it, and it seems to work out okay.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on stepfathering.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Barry Freeman about being a stepfather.
Does a child, for example, if it's a girl, end up not trusting people of the opposite gender? Dad went away. How am I going to trust anybody else who's a male? Do you have that kind of transference?
It depends how a marriage ends. Most divorces don't go to court. Most aren't contentious. And there's a great movement in several states, Minnesota, I think it started, California, Maryland as well, called collaborative law, in which parents who decide to divorce enter into an agreement with lawyers, mental health professionals to work as a team, to not be adversarial, but to solve the problem in the best interest of the whole family. Contentious divorces, as listeners probably know, can be outrageously expensive. I sat down once with two people who were arguing over such a little thing in the way of their divorce settlement, $800 for a dentist bill, and they were going to go to court. And then I asked them how much it would cost, and they weren't sure. When I told them, you know, we court trial could cost $50,000 each. And I said, you have a 14-year-old. Would you rather settle this here or go to court and give the lawyer 4 years of her college education instead of you having it for them? And I quickly came to the realization. So a lot of attorneys are really looking to to keep divorce out of court, and judges are trying to keep divorce out of court. So people do settle it. In many states, it's the law that if parents file for divorce and they have children, they have to go through a two-evening parenting course or effect of divorce on children, where they learn how it affects kids of different ages, how to talk to kids about what's happening, things that they should do. And I've done some research with some others on this process and found that the goal of keeping the kids out of the middle works. I mean, we followed people up after they've taken the course a year later, and they still were firm and wanting to keep the kids out of the middle of the divorce. And it takes a lot of work to do that. It takes a lot of work.
Are there any stories of bonuses for stepfathers that you would want to share?
Well, I think the best bonus is one stepfather who went through the whole process and years later referred to his stepchild as the dessert in his life.
Oh, that's nice.
Because he had the regular meal with his regular children, and then along came this treat that he never, ever expected. And it enhanced his life in a way that he didn't think it would be possible.
And you can just understand how children, especially children who go through loss of a parent in some way to divorce or death or whatever, must feel wonderful if they can have a step-parent come in and be yet another grown-up, as you mentioned, that cares about them and loves them. We all need that.
Sure. I mean, in times past in this country, there were a lot of extended families living close together. And I came from a large family. I remember being angry at my parents and then being able to go to talk to my uncle. And boy, he had a different sympathetic ear. And it was kind of nice to have someone else you could talk to when you're mad at your parent because they wouldn't let you do something stupid and outrageous that you shouldn't have done. A stepfather can serve that function.
What resources would you recommend for listeners who want to pursue further some of the issues that we've been discussing?
Well, of course, there are a lot of websites and a lot of written material that anybody can Google. But I think person-to-person contact and being in groups and talking to other fathers is the right thing. Now, of course, any mental health professional would tell you that it is very difficult to get fathers in any kind of mental health group because you all know that men don't have problems. men don't ever get lost. Uh-huh. We never ask for directions. We have to do everything ourselves. But nonetheless, many mental health groups around do have groups for stepfathers where fathers can get together. And it's wonderful. I mean, I've done many of them. And things that you wouldn't say as a therapist, other fathers would say. For example, one guy who coached his son in soccer for many years. His son loved soccer. Now he was going to the soccer games. And he came into the group and he sat down. And he is furious. I'm not going to go. My wife, she's got this young bimbo, and he's gone to the soccer game, and she's going to sit with him. And I'm not going to go there. I'm not going to humiliate myself. I'm not going to put up with that. And one of the guys got up and said, in no uncertain terms, you get your whatever up. You go to that soccer game. If you don't like that guy, tough, but your son needs you, and you're going there for your son. And he said, sit on the other side of the stadium. Don't sit near him. And the guy went. Now, as a therapist, I would have never said it in that graphic terms. I wouldn't have threatened him like this other guy who, a huge guy, an ex-football coach, big guy. But just the camaraderie of the men was really helpful. And in these groups, the men, after the group, would meet on holidays with their kids, holidays being the Super Bowl, important holidays.
Whatever works.
And have parties together, watch the game with their kids, play, have barbecues. So these kinds of things. And often if fathers do have a question, if kids are of school age, a school counselor is a good tip-off point for knowing the mental health assets in the community. My brother works as an elementary school counselor in the Boston area, and he will have groups for fathers. He'll see a problem like this as the school counselor. He'll invite them in. He'll have a group for them so that they can talk about issues and give them information. You don't call a therapy group with fathers, but it's an educational group. But fathers know they're getting into a tough situation, and they would like some guidance.
So you're saying really the important thing at the beginning is to reach out and find other people that you can make a community with.
Exactly.
In some way.
Because all of us, I think, we're in a tough situation. We realize we feel we're the only person in the world, but they're not. There are plenty of people who feel the same way. And we can get strength from each other and support from each other. A book that I've come up with, The Divorcing Father's Manual, I based this really on my work with fathers doing many, many groups. And after doing many groups, I saw that they had a lot of things in common, things that they had to deal with. And I've tried to address those, to look at how they survive the end of a marriage. And often it's very traumatic. It's tough. Men are not supposed to display their feelings. When I was teaching a couple years ago at Towson, I had two of the football players in my parenting class, the quarterback and fellow who was a split end, and he was about 6'4", a big guy. And we were talking about men and feelings. And one of the young ladies asked him, hey, I saw the football game Saturday and you caught this pass over the middle. You really got slammed. You just got up and walked off. Didn't bother you at all. How'd you feel about it? And he said, to tell you the truth, I felt like crying for my mom. I had hurt so much. But I couldn't do that. This is a football game. So I just had to walk off. So men have feelings, even though it's hard to get them out.
We have had wonderful feelings about this show. You have certainly been a resource to all of us. We've learned an awful lot. So, Dr. Barry Freeman, thank you so much for being with us and talking about stepdads.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
A gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of Dr. Freeman's book, The Divorcing Father's Manual, 8 Steps to Help You and Your Children Survive and Thrive. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to and mention show number 387.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program is made possible with generous support from the Evelyn Sachs Trust. Our sound engineer is Nate DeLuca. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.